This program was produced and first aired on Access Manawatu with support from New Zealand On Air.
Community Access Radio. Access Manawatu.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Frieda Larson.
And I'm Stuart Brooks. Now, Frieda, your family has a very interesting background.
Yes. My great-grandfather was a Chartist, and yeah. They were trying to get votes for people who never had any property or anything, because in those days you had to have so much property to get a vote.
Yeah, this is in the 1830s.
In London, yeah. It must have been in about the 1840s or 50s.
40s, yeah. And the Chartists were supporting the People's Charter.
That's right. And this time they had a meeting in a pub in the East End. And my great grandmother was sick, and so he had to stay home to look after the children. Mm. So he couldn't go to the meeting. And the meeting was raided, and they were tried. The ringleaders were all hanged, and all the rest of the people were all transported to Western Australia. Mm. Because he was the only one that wasn't of all those Chartists.
Mm.
So my grandfather was and grandma were foundation members of the Labour Party because they were both trade union delegates. My grandmother was a seamstress union and my grandfather was carpenters, joiners and cabinet makers union.
Okay. And were they in London or...?
They were in London. At that time they lived in Paddington, which is right in the centre of London. Mm. And one part of it, my grandfather was a councillor. Mm. He was the only Labour Party councillor on the Royal Borough of Kensington.
Yeah.
And, so they were foundation members of the Labour Party. And they were... My father was a Fabian.
Yeah.
So he was in a Fabian society with Bernard Shaw and people like that.
Okay. So this was about when?
Must have been before the war, I suppose, before the First World War.
Okay.
Yeah, because my grandmother was a suffragette too, suffragist.
Mm. Yes, yeah.
She told me I wasn't to call them suffragettes.
Yeah.
And, and I can remember my mother, she got very cross with me one day and she said, "You'll end up in jail like a grandmother." Mm. And I thought, what the heck was my grandmother doing in jail, you know? Mm. So I used to go, there's a great deal of difference between my sister and brother and me. I'm a lot older than them. Mm. So when they used to have their school holidays, my grandmother used to send me to my grandmother in Liverpool one year and my grandmother in London the next or whatever. Mm. So I said to my grandmother in London, "Grandma, were you in jail?" "Oh, yes," she said. "Goodness," I said, "what were you in jail for?" So explained to me all about votes for women and suffragettes and all that. And that, and my other grandmother said to me one day, "Oh, well, you don't take any notice of the Shepherd grandparents, you know. They're not very well educated." Mm. And that, and she'd been to a posh girls' school, you know, and they already taught them etiquette, I think. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, they were very well self-educated, they were readers and they were really self-educated. So, I mean, when I used to go down to... They never, ever said a word against her. I mean, they never, ever said, "Oh, she was a Tory," and all the rest of it. Mm. So I picked early on, you know, who was right.
But that's, you know, the suffragists before the First World War, they were... Were they trying to get votes for all women? Because a lot of men didn't have the vote then.
Well, they were for women, yeah. Well, Emmeline and Christabel, they were the...
The Pankhursts, yes.
Pankhursts. Yes. But they didn't want working-class women to get the vote. They wanted a certain standard of education. Mm. You know, they wanted everybody to be tested. Mm. And, you know, and if they never reached a certain standard... And they wanted that for men as well as women. Mm. And so my grandmother, she didn't agree with that, and she... Sylvia, the younger daughter, she got all the working class women into the into the movement.
Okay. Mm. So they were fighting for... So it was a split in the suffragists? Some wanting...
Well, there was, in a way. Because Emmeline and Christabel, they wanted a certain standard of education. And whether that's a good thing or not, I don't know.
Did they tell you anything about the... well, at that time there was a lot of debate, is universal suffrage good or not? You can even see in some of the newspapers in Australia and New Zealand in the 1870s, 1880s. But was there ever any mention in your family about attitude to the First World War among the suffragists?
Well,
because
I don't know about
the
suffragists.
On the white feathers.
I don't know about the suffragists, but before the war, my grandparents were very anti armies. Mm. And they used to say things like, "Workers don't fight workers," and so I think it was a teenage rebellion thing, because my father's elder brother Will and him both joined the peacetime army my uncle Will, he joined the army years before. My father joined in 1910. He was 18. And then, of course, when the war broke out, they had four sons in the army. One was in the Air Force.
In the First World War?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, well, it was the RFC.
But flying.
Well, very sad that, because he was in the RFC flying those paper and string planes. He was killed in the Blitz in the Second World War. Him and his wife and family and two children. His wife and two children were all killed. Because they had a semi-detached house, and my grandmother was in the other half.
Yeah, that was in London, wasn't it?
In London.
Yeah.
This was in Woolston.
Yeah.
And they got a direct hit on the house. But my grandmother was in Kent with her daughter, so she wasn't there. So they were great members of the Labour Party.
So of your uncles who were in the army in the First World War?
Yeah, all my uncles were in the army.
Did they all survive?
Yes, they all survived, yes. And my mother's brother, he was in the army too, and he survived. She only had one brother.
Yeah. Okay.
So
do you think it had much effect on them, their war service?
Well, my father never talked about it. He never, ever talked about it, you know. Oh, I remember when my son, when his name came up in the national, birthday used to come up.
Yeah.
His birthday came up, and he said he was going to be a conscientious objector. And my father didn't disagree with that at all. My husband did. He was annoyed about it. And he said, "Oh, it's only because of all that Quaker thing," he said. "Puppy stuff you stuck in his head." And my son said, "It's got nothing to do with that." He said, "I'm a political conscientious objector, not a religious conscientious objector."
Okay. And this was about when?
In the 70s.
In the 70s.
Well,
okay. Yeah.
It must have been before the 70s, because the Labour Party took it away in 72.
Okay, yeah.
I remember my grandmother used to say things like, when the Labour Party got in 45, and I used to say, "Oh, they'll do so and so and so." "Oh, no, they won't," said Grandma. "You must remember, a lot of them came out of the same stable." And I said, "Oh, what do you mean by that?" "Oh, well," she said, "they're public school boys, you know, like private school."
Yeah.
She said, "They won't change anything." Because I said, "Oh, they want to nationalise the land." Grandma said, "Don't think about that." She said, "They won't do that," which they didn't, of course.
Yeah.
But, they did a good job. They put in the National Health Service and all that, welfare.
Yeah, that's in Britain you're talking
in
about.
In the UK.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, well, they already had it here.
So your son was a conscientious objector.
He didn't have to go before the tribunal, because the Labour Party got rid of it.
Okay, so he was just at the time when it dropped off, so he was...
That's right, so he didn't have to go before a tribunal.
Okay.
No, but I mean, he wouldn't have passed the medical anyway because he was an asthmatic. Hmm. So he didn't need to object, really, and that's what annoyed my husband. He said, oh, didn't need to object. He said he wouldn't have got in anyway.
Hmm.
And, yeah. Hmm. So, But it was right around about the time of the Vietnam War.
Aye.
Yeah. So, yeah, but all my cousins and all that, they were all Labour.
Yeah. So did you find that the politics here was very different from Britain then? Not really.
A bit more left, I think. Because when I was about 18, I suppose I must have been, I'd been a member of the Labour Party since I was 16. I was in the youth part. And... when I was 18, I joined the ILP, the Independent Labour Party.
Mm.
And I found that the New Zealand Labour Party was more like that than... Mm. Mm. But, yes. So, but I was only in that about a year.
But there was also talk about the trade union movement here in New Zealand was... A lot of the leaders were unionists who'd come out from Britain.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, a lot of them were, yes. Oh, yes. Mm. Yes.
So were they bringing the same concepts and battles out?
I think so. Yeah, because you could hear them on the radio. There were a lot of them, and they all had mostly North Country accents. Yeah. So,
And that was appropriate for you? A lot of it, you know, you get a perception and then people are role-playing. Do you think the UK situation would translate over to New Zealand?
Oh, yeah, I think so, yeah.
You thought a very similar environment for workers here?
Yeah. Well, it's as my grandmother said, it's very difficult for a Labour Party, for socialists, because they don't own the money and they don't own the power, which is true.
Yeah.
You know, she said, Tories have got all the power and all the money.
Mm.
And because my mother never got a vote till 1928.
Yeah.
Because... The first lots of vote they got in Britain were under...
You had to be over 30.
Mm. And she wasn't over 30 until 28. Mm. And she voted Liberal because I can remember we had blue curtains in our sitting room window and she blew she put the curtains out and blew them. Mm-hmm. And everybody knew she voted Liberal.
Uh-huh.
Well, she voted Liberal just about all her life. We used to say, what telephone box do you have in the meeting in this week? Oh, except until she read Lloyd George's biography and she found out he was a bit of a womaniser.
Mm.
And then she stopped voting Liberal, which seemed to me ridiculous.
Mm.
Because it's got nothing to do with his politics.
Yeah.
You know, what difference does it make if he's a womaniser?
Yeah.
But I know she was very funny like that. Yeah.
Well, depends on countries, doesn't it? Like in France, it could be a big positive, and maybe in Italy, but in Britain or America.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous in a way. Mm. But.
So, were you politically active in New Zealand?
Yes, I was a member of the Labour Party. I used to go to meetings. They used to have them in a place in Nain Street. But I never became a real activist in about the 70s.
Mm.
I went to Britain in 74 on a holiday. And my father said, oh, good, he said, you can do the canvassing. I said, what do you mean? I can't canvass here. I don't know anything about it. Mm. Oh, he said, we'll school you up. If you've done canvassing in New Zealand, haven't you? And I said, oh, yes. But I said, I can't. Oh, yes, he said, you can do my job, he said.
Mm.
So he'd evidently been canvassing. And, I mean, he must have been getting on for 80s, I mean, in this late 70s anyway.
Mm.
So I did that, and it was funny, I used to go around and see the people and then say, I know you, but it's from a long time ago. And I'd say, yes, been in New Zealand for the last 28 years.
Yeah.
So, and he got in the man.
Yeah,
in fact, Carlisle's always had a Labour Party, except in the 30s. And Brigadier General Spears got in at Carlisle because he was a great one at finding jobs for ex-servicemen in the 30s. But in the last election, they put a Tory in, which really surprised me, because they've always had a socialist, very good socialist council in Carlisle. They did very well with council houses, lots of lovely council houses in Carlisle. Yes, so...
It is interesting, actually, in Britain, how the local history has such a big effect on the culture and attitude. It's
not so much
as the whole national
thing. Yes.
Where the money is and where the jobs are.
Yeah, well, it was this Brexit thing that, you know, that was a lot of the problem, you know, people voting for Brexit.
Yeah, it's still a lot of
it's a lot of propaganda.
Yes, well, this was one of the issues we were talking before in the vote and who should have the vote. And one of the things now we've got more and more sophisticated in terms of they were talking around the Second World War. They talk about propaganda, and then it was bias, and they talk about the framing, how you structure something, and with PR company, the public relations type companies getting far more involved. If you've got a political issue, or you think, okay, how do we get support for this, or how do we get opposition to it, depending on which side you are, and you get, what simple argument can we use, a simple line that we'll emphasise right through. So those who are arguing for Brexit were saying, we need independence, there's all these people coming into the country, we've no control over it, we've lost our chance to make decisions for ourselves. And so that was their simple point that they emphasised. And then those saying we should stay in, they said, oh, we'll emphasise the economic turmoil that would arise if we left. And so it wasn't a broad debate on the implications of what will happen once you change at all. But that's common in politics
Well, I remember my brother telling me that the Cumbrian people were annoyed because they interfered with the food, like the deciding how the bacon and ham was to be preserved and all that, you know. And they said, we've been doing this way for hundreds of years, and here these Europeans come and tell us what to do.
Of course, if it had been British people saying, yeah, things have changed now and do it differently, then what annoyed me was
when Britain wanted to go into the EC and de Gaulle said no. And I thought that was terrible, because we'd fed and clothed and board and everything 140,000 French, free French, for 4 years. From 1941 to 45. And we'd done all that, and then he turns around and says no. You know, and then I think that the reason why was because he probably thought that if the Brits got in at the beginning, they'd be controlling it, which was probably true. No, I think it was a big mistake, because they're going to lose all that trade.
Coming out, there's some people had the idea, well, they'll be able to build all sorts of trade
with the empire,
relations
with
elsewhere.
With the Commonwealth,
Hard to know, but there's certainly be a lot of turmoil on the way through.
Oh, I think so,
And it wasn't what people expected. Just what's required in the change. But you might have... Did you like the idea... You still got a British passport as well?
No.
You gave that up?
Well, what happened was... One part of it, I forget when it was. My husband and I decided we'd go for a trip, you see, and so... I thought, well, he could get a British passport because it would be easier for him going on the continent. Oh, no, he couldn't have a British passport because he was of Danish descent, blah, blah. I got really angry about that. So I sent my passport back to the British High Commission and said, keep it. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. But, and then, then of course, my sister and them said, oh, what will you do if you go on the continent? Oh, well, I never had any problems.
Yeah.
I had used my New Zealand passport, no problems.
Yeah.
Of course, when I got off the plane at Heathrow, and my sister and her husband came to meet me, and of course, I was in the aliens queue. Mm. With all the Indians and Pakistanis, yeah. They were absolutely horrified. What were you doing in that queue? You shouldn't have been in that queue. You were. Mm. Well, I said, I'm an alien. Yeah. How can you be an alien? You were born here. And I said, well, if it's good enough for my husband to be an alien, it's good enough for me. Yeah. I said, he put his neck on the line for 4 years. And I said, and then they turned him down. I said, it didn't seem to me to be right.
Yeah. Now, when you got New Zealand citizenship, you said you got it automatically.
Yeah.
I found the thing that surprised me, because I came here with a British passport, and then some time later I took out New Zealand citizenship. But you had to sign or swear an oath of allegiance to the Queen of England, well, I suppose also the Queen of New Zealand, to get New Zealand citizenship. And I thought, for my British passport, I didn't have to swear allegiance to the Queen. that was quite
strange. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Now we've got it automatically.
Yeah. Mm. But your children would still have an entitlement to British passport because you...
Oh, well, I don't know about that, but my grandson was able to go over there and work. He went over there and worked, and he never had any problems.
Yeah,
because of his grandmother being a Brit.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. But the other ones have never wanted to. They've just gone for holidays.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, for a long time, British passport was also a European passport. But
well, that's right.
That's going to change.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes, that's what my sister reckoned. Oh, when we want to go on the continent, you'll have a dang of a job, blah, blah, blah. I never had any problem at all.
No. Well, I found they don't seem to check passports these days.
No.
Because now with two passports, often I'd sort of leave New Zealand on a New Zealand passport and then go into Europe on a British one.
Yeah, that's what most people did,
But I did one time I did that, and then coming back I had the New Zealand passport out because then you need your passport for the flight ticket. And then this was in Italy, I was flying back from Italy, and then automatically when I went through the passport check, I gave them the New Zealand passport, and the person looked and he saw there was no sign that I'd come in on a New Zealand passport. He was a bit puzzled because I'd actually come in on the UK one, but he just waved me through. And then I thought, well, okay, so they knew I'd come to Europe. I never left on the British passport. The next time I come in, what's happening? But I don't think the record keeping's all that close now.
Thank you for listening to Manawatū Conversations. This and other recent programs can be found on the Access Manawatū website. A range of programs is also available on the Manawatū Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive, and the address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Access Manawatū is a non-profit radio station.
We exist to help people from Manawatū make programs just like this one.
All of our shows are free to listen to and free to make.
If you like what you hear and you'd like to help us make more,
you can donate through our website.
Go to www.accessmanawatū.co.nz and click on the donate link on the front page to help us keep on giving people their fair share of the air.